This is the audio edition of Touchstone, produced by Poetry Society of New Hampshire, psnh.org. Ocean's Communion by Rosemary Staples.
Ocean's Communion. The ocean rages, spits its spray high, baptizes me as I walk by. Inhale of salt air cleanses, taste of brine, like communion on my tongue. Water, the color of sea glass, soothes. Light plays, sparkles, dances on wave tops. Foam dissolves like wafers on the shoreline as pebbles roll, clap, and cheer. A storm unleashed churns, deposits treasures upon the sand. Lone driftwood tossed skyward floats above, perhaps escaping a wreckage, like a miscarriage torn away from its vessel. In the distance, a lighthouse glows, stands as a sentinel, a beacon, a siren watching, shouting, SOS. The sea, power of life, demands, deserves respect. Ships drop anchor. Sailors long to drop the weight of the world, head on home to their sanctuaries.
Halibut Point by Patrice Pinette. On a wooded path to the sea, beyond the quarry, a black butterfly leads us to the jagged slabs of stone that slope to water's edge. Barnacled, the seaweed-soaked granite glistens, deep brown as wet fur. When late afternoon light gives way to cold, we turn back, stopping at the edge of the quarry's deep pool to watch the sunset. As counterpoint to chilling air, the fiery horizon, crashing waves, silent at a distance. In stillness, we stay through the glow. Intimate, yet vast, the elemental touch that holds the world and us together. Not in this hour alone, of course, but this time you tell me what you know in every cell is well-being, the order of things, each and every in its place, in its time, belonging. The fight goes out of you for an hour or more. Peace abiding. Spray of the surge, sunset, first stars will be forgotten again and again. Tide going out, you take my hand.
Heeding the Call by Barbara Bald. How many days, months, or years has she wakened to this darkened room? Light peeking under shades, rousing her from achy muscles and creaking joints, asking her to leave warm silken sheets as she and her tabby stretch like toads after a hard winter under mud. How many more years remain as she begs to a God she doesn't yet believe in? Words, please, just a few more years drift out from a window ever so slightly opened to a harsh world. What is it makes an old woman ache to stay in bed, yet long to rise to meet the day? Loss of friends, pain in the body, floods in war-torn countries, road rage across town. What makes her covet another year? Perhaps, as it does sometimes, love came late to her, appreciation lost in a pailful of unending desires. Maybe love that dawns slowly lingers long in the heart's chambers. Maybe she hears it calling from the scent of apples in her yard, the poem needing to be written, the grasshopper on the step begging to come inside before winter arrives.
My Husband Said No More Babies by Jessica Lyons.
My husband said no more babies. At 5:15, paling treetops emerge and the high, square windows across my room's expanse. "Mama," whispers my last daughter, who hoists herself and her fleece blanket beside me. We've both awakened, wet-haired with sweat, hushed but unsettled under the restless fan. I breathe the sweet powder and pungence of her urine-soaked body. I swindle her back to sleep, still her limbs against my softness. Pretend another day hasn't taken us in its fist. But still the light encroaches, oranging the insides of my eyelids, lengthening her fawn-colored hair.
Sweeping Joy Across the Threshold by Jessica Lyons.
Sweeping Joy Across the Threshold. I'm in the new house, its goldenrod door painted to catch the attention of Joy, who I worry might miss this dwelling. I want her to linger with my children in a site I've made sacred for her, made numinous by naming it, by planting sweet fern at its edges. The troubled dog dozes and my father thumbs his phone until he looks up to tell me the ozone hole is closing, will close in my lifetime, that there's more distance between us and heaven. The acolytes who ready my body for rejoicing unbend from prayer to hang banners from my heart. They empty into the leeways of my body, grab each other by the arm to laugh, kiss each other's mouths, allow themselves to delight in the sweep of hope's rushing relief.
Grateful, A Triolet, by Melissa Jechnowitz, read by Melissa Sprague. In merciful years, when all youth has gone, I'm grateful for the smallness of my life, delighted by a simple winter dawn. In merciful years, when all youth has gone, when desperate hopes have graciously withdrawn and slipped through yearning like a butter knife. In merciful years, when all youth has gone, I'm grateful for the smallness of my life.
My Therapist Reminds Me Again How My Parents' Divorce Plays a Role in My Trauma by Maya Williams.
My Therapist Reminds Me Again How My Parents' Divorce Plays a Role in My Trauma, a contrapuntal. I am my father's child, praying desires to mitigate uncontrollable anger, obsession, God, dig me out. I am my mother's child, trying to find my way, broke my heart on too many walks upon yellow brick roads, pleasing plentiful wizards to solve my messes. I am my father's child, I am my mother's child, praying, trying to find my way, desires, broke my heart to mitigate on too many walks, uncontrollable upon yellow brick roads, anger, pleasing, obsession, plentiful, God, wizards, dig me out to solve my messes.
Pop Styling by C.M. Ersprung. Tell everyone now today I shall sing beautifully for my friend's pleasure. To make superheroes from slime, to lick chipped nail polish clean, I shall cut each one anew, sculpted from neoprene sewn with thin cotton thread. Sternums stamped at the entrance with spit and coarse salt. They shall move as gyroscopes do, suspended so long as my voice catches their spindles, so long as their glory-bloated hearts sound against bodices made of corrugated denim. So long as I sing, they might not figure that the starlight I've set beneath them is fabricated from slabs of pressed gel.
Hands by Mona Anderson. I shrieked as she chased me across the lawn. And when her witch's hat fell askew and her cackle squeaked so high she coughed, we toppled to the grass, convulsed in tears, gasped for breath. She laughed as hands clasped her chest. Scarlet, pointy nails, gnarled knuckles, rivers of blue-green veins bubbling above mottled skin, and I marveled that she must be really, really old. This memory arises as I knead dough, a simple white bread that will taste like sun when warm and slathered with butter. My hands push and turn and push against the counter's resistance. These days, with some joints too swollen to make a fist, just my palms work the dough. I see her hands in mine, wrinkled, raised veins, a landscape of brown spots, and I think she has finally caught me.
Roll Rock Shine by Leanne St. Laurent.
Roll Rock Shine. I tried to be a rock. Solid, reliable, mineral, always right where you expect me to be. But it was too hard. There was no bend. So I decided to be a river instead. Never the same twice. Dulcet shapeshifter, wielding quiet influence, inviting rocks and stones to rock and roll. See how they shine in liquid gloss. And look, there you are. Didn't think you could swim.
Du Stedning, You Know, by Leanne St. Laurent.
Du Stedning, You Know? Sweetheart, let's do some Swedish death cleaning. Let's do it tonight. We'll put on some real jazz while Sirius swings across the vernal sky. I mean, aren't you a little tired of this surplusage of stuff, this filled house? Fling open the windows and doors. Let's polish off that cheap red blend and dance like we never did before. My God, how the stars sparkle when the moon is new. And oh, and didn't I?
Kronos by Russell Rowland, read by David Bannock. When the old man of the mountain slid from the mountain, he carried time's public face with him. We were crestfallen. Still that left Indian head up in the notch. It said, "Our time will come." Which led Whiteface to say, "Maybe our time has passed." Black Snout in the Ossipee spoke next, "I will let the lowlands find me beautiful in their own sweet time." Doublehead offered this, "Time like an ever-flowing stream," and naturally spoke it twice. Elephant Head at Crawford said, "Time may grind all the white mountains down to dust, but elephants never forget." Defiance by Awakaki.
Defiance. A candle in an unfeathered night is hope. A thousand candles, a torch, a resolve to set the darkness alight. A thousand torches, the rising sun.
On Reading Patricia Smith's Now He's an Etching by Elizabeth Gaffreau.
On Reading Patricia Smith's Now He's an Etching. I wandered the byways of the blues, drawn to whiskey and swagger, gravel and rasp. Smile on the backbeat. Before the heart offers up its sanctity of pain, celebrant seeking salvation, congregants in no need of grace.
Bruise by Liz Au.
Bruise. Hello, blood, pooling now at the slightest nudge, smudging a reminder of how I might die, but mostly how I'll spend the rest of my life balancing thin and thick, perpetually medicating and measuring towards a perfectly restrained fluidity. If I'm still enough, I can hear it sluicing through the network, out and back, out and back, feel the pulse of myself knocking softly at every door. Here, some has trickled through a gap and paints plum and pewter on my forearm, a storm cloud tattoo I rub with my thumb. Never mind. The morning air takes my face in its hands, so tenderly, so lightly, as if it loves me.
Bird Sightings by Liz Au.
This poem was inspired by recent bird sightings as reported to the Massachusetts Audubon Society and published in the Sunday Boston Globe in March. This is called Bird Sightings. Two sandhill cranes, a common yellowthroat, a Lincoln sparrow in its speckled coat, two pileated woodpeckers and, more, some 90 northern pintails at the shore, 200 ring-necked ducks and two marsh wrens, a barred owl through a telephoto lens, 32 tree swallows, 50 coots, 15 bohemian waxwings to boot, osprey, egrets, ibis, pipits, teal. In this week's shocking warmth, they soar and reel. Uncounted here, yet present, they persist. The loyal amateur ornithologists report their findings each week to this list. They're haunted, always, by the birds they missed.
By Emily Schaefer, read by Melissa Sprague. These supermarket flowers look like you. Please only get me supermarket flowers. They are yellow splotches on the sun-stained curtains you refuse to close. They are cloud patterns and freshly mowed grass, and you are like summer, and clothes-lined sheets sinking into the basket. And when I was six, we'd escape into the lilac bush, run our hands over balloon blooms, grasshoppers in hair's tangle. And you are like yellow flowers, sunshine daisies, grass tufts, and home.
On Being Unimpressed with the James Webb Space Telescope by Abigail Hamm.
On Being Unimpressed with the James Webb Space Telescope. I was ready to change my life, ready to stand agape at the doors between worlds, glittering through the dust of us like ancient gold. But I have seen this before, Jim. These billion-year-old lights shine over the heads of faces in a subway station that remind me for a moment of home. They shine on the rims of bowls of pho at my favorite restaurant, in the star-studded gutter ice over my window leaking all through the night. I won't pretend to be awed or to feel small. In a world of desert kites, of stargazer lilies, I refuse to be intimidated by the universe.
The Blue Hills by Abigail Hamm.
The Blue Hills. Land of copperheads, land of the summit by sunset, land where the center folds. I was walking alone on the same land where you were, and I was stopped at length on the trail between my own long memory and your short temper. It was October, and there was no blue anywhere in the Blue Hills, only the fire of autumn. And when the tongue touched my hand, it was numb already. How long have I been dead?
On Solid Ground by Paul Gudarzi Fry.
On Solid Ground. Afterwards, I had to explain the thermocline to him, the point in a body of water where the temperature declines sharply, so sharply that any animal caught in between the strata will be unable to rise again to the warmth above. It knows where it should be, and even the direction. Its mind and its body are at odds past the point of no return. Trust has a thermocline, and I wanted to ask him about faith, too, maybe duty, other habitats where there's no going back to the spot where we could wonder how much can we take before the blood no longer makes allowances for the heart's intrepid nature. What was it like before? He asked me. Your last man. He asked me, I'm sorry, and yes, it was a question. What's the cutoff, and what's the ocean? What is your body's history made of? What undersea waves pushed you through to me? How can I make it better? And I didn't have an answer. I wanted steadiness. A palm impressed. Unmoving.
An Elderly Mountain Highway by Julia H. Font.
An Elderly Mountain Highway. An elderly mountain highway sheens with new blacktop as it waltzes with a sparkling stream. The pair turning with skill around barnlit farms greeting dawn, chapel chimes saturating noon air, and hushed villages sleeping beneath glittered black. The stream whirls and dips under covered bridges, kicks rocks, moves sticks, and fills itself to the brim to widen and become part of something bigger. But this is the road's tale. A two-laner allowing access to green tractors, blue balers, and big rigs. Its arms bridge over the stream to reach homes tucked into the forest's empty pockets. Its asphalt legs creep onto dirt lanes leading to ponds painted with clouds and paths that climb to touch them. At times remote, dancing through woods, this lifeline threads tiny towns like a string of beads and hangs them from highways leading anywhere. Like the rope you threw my heart, and we became more than we were, love moving us beyond ourselves. But this poem belongs to the scenic route running the range, born before early settlers wrapped reins over rails at general stores, proudly declaring with all their hard work this horse-trodden trail had become the best it could ever be.
An Irish Abbey by Martha Bufkin Kane, read by Melissa Sprague. The roof collapsed in a great wind and rain, and the few that saw said, 'Tis a pity, a shame indeed, that the roof gave way. But they had given it up long before, when gaunt cheeks could hold their smiles no more, and mouths were too empty to sing. Most left for fatter dreams, but for a few that stayed. The gray friar who tended the place, holy, more holy and older than faith. He kept the lambs and devotions each day, while the walls crumbled to garden, following the prayers away. 'Tis a shame I cannot keep up with them, said the cowled gray man, a pity indeed. But the stones, they know where they belong, and they are too fast for me. They buried him in the storm-cupped nave next to his brothers before the roof caved in. Now he lies in the open, a habit of flowers, a tonsure of stars, the stones now kneeling on him. The few who saw said, 'Tis a pity, a shame indeed. Now who will take care of the weed-ridden place? Who will teach us all to pray?"
Bertha, by Anthony Jackson.
I met Bertha at a sleazy bar. Bertha told me she had a cat named Pickles who could talk. Pickles had caught Jesus stealing Bertha's car. Pickles said that Jesus had gone woke. Pickles resented the fact that Jesus was knotted off on Skid Row. But Bertha, she just loved those trucks flying Trump 2024 flags, driven by Russian rifle-bearing patriots. Pickles had told her to attend the insurrection. Pickles feared miscegenation. Pickles hated reproductive protections. Pickles was absolutely terrified the birth dearth would mean the end of Caucasians. Intrigued, of course, I got another whiskey for this disheveled-looking woman. Bertha said, "I'm not racist. I just love Clarence Thomas." She told me that Pickles had a crush on Candace Owens. Bertha tried to convince me of some grand gay conspiracy, that the drag queens were out to get me. They were mutilating babies in basements, after all. She and Pickles had heard it on Hannity. Every night together, they'd watch Fox News. Pickles was sick of filthy immigrants. Pickles despised lazy communists collecting welfare checks. Pickles loved student debt because it kept wage slavery intact. Pickles only smoked American cigarettes. Pickles had collected PPE loans to stock up on catnip because, after all, Pickles deserved it. Bertha leaned in real close, that cheap liquor on her breath. She said, "You're different. You listen. You don't talk like them. You don't act like them. You're kind of cute. What's your name?" In my head, I said, "My name is Gay Rights. My name is Cities in Flames. My name is Hands Off Our Bodies. My name is Gender Affirming Care. My name is Mental Health Equity. My name is Black Lives Matter. My name is George Floyd. My name is Land Back. My name is Too Late, Bertha. The drag queens already got me." But from my mouth came simply and politely, "Anthony." Later that night, my phone dinged. It was a Facebook request from the woman whose cat I was quite sure hacked voting machines. Bertha Van Nation wants to be your friend. I think I should really quit drinking.
Mutahari and Me by Susan Birch, read by Melissa Sprague. In 1917, Mutahari blew a kiss to her executioners. "Blushing moon, I've still got it." Her head was preserved, embalmed, and put on display in the Paris Museum of Anatomy, where later it went missing and has been missing ever since. Losing my car keys, same difference. They say she was a temptress, spy, and scapegoat. Twitter hashtag, I be all I can be.
Shattered by Julie Marie Hoey.
Shattered. They bowed their heads in sadness, in prayer, heavy-hearted, hollowed and haloed, as night fell midday. In the darkest of hours, stars were not shooting. They were bullets, shrieking, shredding, shattering. Tanks rolling, bombs dropping, people fleeing, begging, screaming, dying. Innocents kill innocents, while munitions mongers, greedy generals, and perverted politicians fill their coffers, feed their egos, and parade their pathetic pride. Sunflowers shattered before our eyes.
To the roofers nailing shingles in the cottage behind mine, by Silas Denver Melvin, read aloud by L. Warren. My father was once of your kind, in bleach-blue cut-offs, tossing his mullet over either side of his sweated neck. My mother, below, with her toes painted and dangling out the window of the pickup, while she thumbed a Stephen King novel until it was time for lunch. End grinder rolls were dressed with oils and thin sliced meat, and every can of soda weeped brilliant in the heat of the summer. I watch you now, lithe and young in your black work shirts, angled like mountain goats against the pitch of the house, your boots mostly new, not yet worn with scuff and tar, and wonder if any of you were married, if you got snared at this age, into the arms of a woman who will send you off with apples and animal crackers for the next 20 years. And if, in those 20 years, any of you diligent roofers, forcing nails into shingles, will come home and throw a plate against the wallpaper, and hold your wife by her dark, dark hair to keep her head in place as she rides, makes no sound except her steady breathing, and with your rancid mouth say to her, just above a whisper, but loud enough for your keen and silent children to hear, I should have left you where I found you, you dumb whore bitch. Fear and Loathing, Seawash, Hampton, by Silas Denver Melvin, read aloud by L. Warren. For Pat and Kai on C Street. In a laundromat, you can read your friends' fear and loathing from the copy you stole in high school. But first you have to get out. You have to spend 3 years wasted, limp, and stupid, and pinching down pink pills. You have to blink slowly, inoculate yourself against nihilism, teach your body how to eat in front of company. You have to suffer the mandatory, the tried suicide, the desultory sex, all the hours Earth's sick with panic, scratching a hole in the wall you'll never fit through. You have to be revenant, evergreen. You have to quiver in the sun on your birthday, on your anniversary, in the middle of a market basket, too afraid to take a ticket in line at the deli. In a laundromat, in Hampton, on a Saturday. On this earth, nothing more than a pale blue dot, of which I have known and had all of my insurmountable love and loss again. You can read your friends, held together by horsehair and zip ties, fear and loathing, from your outlaw copy you have dressed dumbly and many seasons of annotation. But first you have to start the car and get the soap. And do not forget this part, you must show up. And to show up, you must stubbornly continue your living. All of you, God damn it.
Black Peppermint by Carla Schwartz. It started with the farmer's market, Gainesville, 1996. Be there or be no one. I sought out the South Asian vendor, among the mushrooms, the juiciest tangerines, the strawberries $4 a flat. I bought a 50-cent bunch of his black peppermint and rooted it, but the next year uprooted myself and in the car, my roseberry, my mint, we headed north to the home I bought for two of us that was from the start never an us, just mine. And there the mint thrived, fields of it, sometimes 4 feet high before it sunk under its own weight. Gravity downer. I love the mint's deep purple when it first pokes up in spring. With such abundance, I'd dry bunches on the counter for chilled summer tea or hot tea or to use in the basement as a mouse deterrent. I'd store it in bags, canisters, baskets, anywhere I could find. 23 years in that house, and I moved again, this time with my love. Of course, I brought a little of the mint with me to root and plant. The black peppermint that started at that farmer's market persists in my new home. Not too much of it, though. Not yet, anyhow. The spearmint, the daylilies, they all compete. Now I'm lying in bed in our other home, our tiny houseboat, one of those bags of dried mint hanging from the ceiling in a wire cage. It's been neglected there for a few years through heat and cold cycles, this mint. So maybe now it's mostly mouse deterrent too. But put your nose in and inhale. Long days of sun, a dry wind.
Medusa in Dreadlocks by John Wessick.
Medusa in Dreadlocks. I grew up in an inertial reference frame, eating Aztec cereal from a health food store, its orange-red wedges whole except for tiny crescents bitten from the tips. Those were good times if you owned a railroad, but even the sun will go dark someday. Pinching my nose, I dove after a shooting star and surfaced by an island, floating on a sea of bitterness, a solitary tree clinging to life on its shores, and Medusa in dreadlocks, sunning by the bank. This poem is a mirror. I have no sword, no hardness of 10 on the Mohs scale, no hardness of conflict diamond traffickers, no hardness of women who wear them. Even so, I touch tongue to Sharon of the beautiful knees, temporal lobes, while she rested chin on palms, stubby forearms making an A with the tabletop. Her voice stroked my ears with velvet fingers, but as Bukowski says, meeting a woman is an accident, her leaving a law of nature. All the gramophones went mute, but I still have her picture eating an ice cream cone on a Nova Scotia dock. When those Bond films collapse to a glowing dot in the center of the cathode ray tube, my electron lined up at the unemployment office and hasn't been seen since, so I sewed a bulletproof vest of adjectives. Cocooned by Kevlar, my heart remains hidden, even to myself. Gamma dog, protect us from splash of red, void of black. Let us not waste.
Disappearing by J. L. Long, read by David Bannock. What I didn't understand is that grief would not be one large calamity, a single avalanche, but a slow war of attrition, an endless series of little losses. A water glass shatters, and I remember that you gave it to me 6 Christmases ago. A sweater snags, unfurls, and I lose the last birthday gift that ever came from your hands. Things break, get lost, wear out. Just like human beings, I suppose. And eventually even these totems of your missing presence will disappear, just like you. Grandson Grayson by Christopher Dornan.
This is called Grandson Grayson. We wake when you wake. We sleep when you sleep. You wave, pinch, and sing vowels. You gurgle, you snore with eloquence. You bite toothlessly. You grin with our own intelligence. We leave you a world more savage than ours. How will you save Miami from flood? Or California from fire. Speak truth to our endangered democracy. Build greenhouses 50 stories tall. Visit these bottomless black holes in the night sky. You must.
Grief Takes Me for a Walk by Julia Bloxma. I've abandoned my somber skeins of words that knit up only grief. Instead, I'll walk along a tidal river on a dike thrown up to keep the water from the fields. It has held, this dike, 200 years and more against the roaring tides that back the river up for miles, then suck the water out, scouring the riverbed. I've seen only mud, the void, but now high tide water laps the banks. The wind comes for me, opens my coat. The currents and the moon conspire to rock this river back and forth, back and forth. I want to learn the rhythm of the tides.
Immortality by Jeff Stumpo.
Immortality for Stan Lee. You read enough comics, and death starts to lose its fixed position. Take Thanos and the infamous snap, as though all of life could be grabbed by the neck and shook. 6 months later, genocide undone for 250. You start to believe Hitler could have been thwarted for the cost of a bike route. After all, hasn't Magneto survived? Hasn't Wolverine? Hasn't Jean Grey been resurrected any number of times? Didn't that high school girl come up to me after a reading and ask for a hug because I told 800 kids in no uncertain terms that being gay was all right? Maybe that's the marvel. Maybe we're cheating death one embrace at a time. Are kind words the kind of magic that trades no more mutants for I see you and accept you? Maybe deep down we do get it, the X-Men metaphor. Maybe our gods are better than the ancients. Maybe what happened is that we all lost someone, even ourselves, but instead of giving up, we went looking. We shared responsibility and in doing so, found great power. Maybe that girl will live on forever in this poem. Maybe someday someone will write about me.
How the Survivors Save Me by Alyssa Parcells.
How the Survivors Save Me. I think of them when I am cold, all those who stood in the snow, shivering in their thin coats, without their mittens, hats, or hair, in shoes worn through to their bones. I think of them when I am hungry, all those who stood and waited for a ladle of warm watered soup and a piece of bread to last all day, to be rationed, shared, traded, or maybe saved in a pocket like a gold coin. I think of them when I am tired, all those exhausted by their hunger, cold, and torture, who slept in shifts on wooden bunks in the din of cries, some of them their own. When I think of not forgiving, I think of those who did. When I think of being angry, I think of those who knew how to let go. When I think of giving up, I think of those who didn't, those who reached into their pocket and found a crumb.
View by Kelly White, read by Melissa Sprague. We found my father's binoculars on a shelf in your linen closet, behind rags and Lysol. They were heavier than either of us remembered, and harder to focus, though if I took my glasses off and steadied the heft of them with two hands, I could see for a moment clearly. I carried them to the little house in the woods to watch the owlets in their crevice in a massive beech tree. Today there is a heavy wind. The owlets fledged a month ago. My father's been dead 20 years. Now the binoculars hang again beside his fishing hat. Is it worth watching empty trees?
Can't Let It Go by Marjorie Moorhead.
can't let it go. Merry-go-round, hold on for dear life. Try to find center, that centrifugal force, safe spot, stillness in storm, balance. How to not ignore, how to dwell in joy, simultaneously aware of great sorrow, horror, harm inflicted. Are we complicit? How to ingest randomness? How to flow in the middle of the river, sharing water, the current, and stay afloat, some falling behind, sinking, gone under, others way ahead, oblivious, blind. How can an entirety be held? I cup my hands. How can it be we breathe same air? Me here, you over there. Me here with mountains and spring, you with all that bombs bring, holding on to no thing, nothing.
Venetian Glass by Rohan Budel, read by David Bannock. A week on Earth is a slow strobe, alternating day and night as the globe turns black, then white. A camera shutter captures snapshots of the shifts, missing the movement in between, leaving a series of vignettes. Lines of conflict shift on the surface or stay unmoved as attacks falter against entrenched positions. I would disengage if I could, disembodied leave this planet, float above the routine and the chaos, remove the focus on the quakes of shifting tectonic plates. The greater the distance from this fragile blue Murano world, the less involved, the more peaceful an existence.
Dear Evelyn by A.J. France, read by Melissa Sprague. I tried on your wedding dress today. The crisp bodice hugged my waist, and your white hat floated perfectly atop my hair. I think maybe I hope to see fractions of your face in mine, a dimple, an eyebrow, the shape of my jaw. But as I stared into the mirror next to the cedar closet, I was the only one staring back. As I studied the sleeves, my fingers tracing their stitches, I realized that probably I don't know what to look for. I only know you from the way your name hangs heavy in the air, lingering each time it is mentioned, or by the way that light shines off the glossy pages of a scrapbook, retelling the past, the people I will never know. I always thought you looked uncomfortable in those wedding portraits, stiff, cold, as that man, the police officer, held you by his side, one hand lifting your veil. I am older now than you were then, having survived 17 without becoming a bride, having applied to college while you got fitted for this gown, this life. As I slip off your dress, I am hit with the smell of old paper and mothballs. While I know that once this fabric smelled of your perfume, which I crave knowing, just as I yearn to recognize the sound of your laughter as it fills a room, at least this scent gives me something to know you by. Until now, you have been emptiness to me, the dissonance of someone missing from a place in my memories where they belong. You have been sour late-night tears and the stifling heat of your cemetery as I wade through its unkempt lawn, looking for your gravestone just off Gratiot, down the street from a dispensary
and a check-cashing place, and across the highway from the blighted factory where your father and his father once worked. If I were strong enough, I would pick you up and carry you away from that place back to this corner of my basement, where I could tuck your spirit into this white cardboard box. You could rest peacefully, eternally, in this sea of tissue paper, and swim between its thin white waves, floating alongside your dress, now no more than an heirloom, but what once started and ended your life.
Late March, and the Cardinal is on the Subaru, by Linda Dinney Jenkins.
Late March, and the Cardinal is on the Subaru. He has come back again this year and is hopping from the top of the driver's side mirror down to the window ledge where he can look into it. He sees himself and hops back quickly. And so it goes, on the mirror, then onto the ledge, looking into the mirror, an instant, then up again. It continues for more than 5 minutes. He has probably never seen himself before and may not even know what he is seeing now. It may be that a territorial dispute is brewing between the Cardinal and his image. It may be that he is smitten by the other pretty bird. It may be that he knows full well that he is looking at himself and is pleased or not, depending on his mood. Perhaps he has done this in other places, with Volvos and Chevrolets. Perhaps he wants to be sure that he is really there, surprised at having not been done in by the long winter. Perhaps, like the rest of us, he needs this reassurance, looking, then looking away, then looking again, like when we catch our reflections in large city windows, seeking quickly, with feathered nerves and ruffled hair, proof.
I Did This, by Michael Brosnan.
I Did This. Enjoying the drug of driving a back road alone, I hear a faint thud against the car door. I stop, see nothing in the rearview mirror. I get out of the car, still nothing. Then I see it, a tiny bird writhing on the road. My heart sinks. I walk over, bend down, and lift the injured being, a thrumming, thumb-thick hummingbird, this impossible animal, still conscious, a whir of life, ignited by fear and the futile desire for flight. Its left wing broken and beaded with blood, a few shades darker than the pinky print of ruby on its delicate throat. I did this, I think. I did this. I did this, driving the long way to town to have dinner with a woman I had hoped to love one day.
After the Last Frost, by Nancy Bailey Strong, read by Melissa Sprague. The sage of Derry writes of springtime's mending, a seasonal cycle of chores, ravages, repairs, downed limbs, whole trees felled by winter winds, ice and snow, rocks, frost-heaved, tumbled from perches, lay at rest heavy among leaf mold and clay. At boundary wall's foot, they await some farmer's steady pace along a property line. "Something there is," he mutters, "that doesn't love a wall." Then bends, grunts, levers a weighty stone,
sets it in its place. Broken fence rails and missing slats at an enclosure's edge require but a bit of work, a hammer, straightened nails, a length or two of wire to put right for the summer. The old bull whose pasture this is snorts, paws, mucky earth, meanders to the fence line to take its measure. The sage of Derry will not weave words today about wooden slats and rails and neighbors. Wonders, will any fence hold a heifer in season?
In the Milk Room by Mary Castelli. Written at Jane Kenyon and Donald Hall's Eagle Pond Farm. On a shelf in the old milk room at Eagle Pond, broken bits of domesticity and put-asides are set. Jane's teapot, its handle broken in a kitchen accident, sits next to a sugar bowl which converses with a chipped teacup. Below them is a set of flat irons from the 1800s, heavy enough to press out wrinkles from two aprons. The yellow one for church suppers, the blue flower print for every day, hang behind the kitchen door. Items curated to keep but not clutter the present within the penumbra of the past. Like drafts of a poem, written, discarded, rewritten, set aside. At the back window, Ragged Mountain plunges toward the farmhouse pantry.
You've been listening to Volume 66 of Touchstone, produced by Poetry Society of New Hampshire. You can get a print copy of Touchstone by getting a membership to the Poetry Society of New Hampshire at psnh.org.